Hey, what's up, Internet? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and creative entrepreneurs looking to grow, not only by learning new things, but by connecting their work to big ideas and overcoming the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. Welcome to episode 155, Catching Up with Goff. In this episode, I catch up with Australian filmmaker Goff and have a chat about his latest film called A Day in the Life of a Personal Trainer, now available at beernutsproductions.com. We talk about where the idea for the script came from, how the perfect casting choices brought his main character and supporting characters to life, why he is the Australian David Lynch of comedy, and who's doing comedy right in Australia and America. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/155. All right, you ready for this interview with Goff? Let's get into it.
Just lots and lots of coffee.
That's right. I'm already two pots in today, so I think the third might be like Monty Python, The Meaning of Life, and then wait for Thin Mint, I might explode.
Great scene.
Well, on that note, Goff, welcome back to Getting Work to Work. It's been 4 months since you were last on the show. So what have you been up to?
Well, thank you again for having me on, Chris. It's always great to have a chat with you. And we've been busy at old the Beer Nuts Productions Fun Factory. We just released our latest film, which is really, really exciting. It's a mockumentary on the fitness industry, so pretty much ripping the fitness industry apart. So yeah, it's been busy making that piece.
Day in the Life of a Personal Trainer is the film. And it's a hilarious look at personal trainers. And I have to ask, where did the idea for this come about?
Well, the main character in it, Jackie, is inspired by a woman that actually used to work at the gym I attend. She, I know it's hard to believe that there's a person actually like that walking around on this planet, but there actually is. And she does mainly classes and stuff, and you could hear her like berating everybody in the class from like down the hallway. It was madness. And I did her class a few times and she kind of freaked you out, but you kind of liked her at the same time. It was weird. So that's where the main character is actually inspired by somebody I used to know. So and after about a couple of months of knowing this particular lady, I thought, I need to write you down because you're pretty cool. So I wrote her down and then just added some of my own sort of political commentary on the fraudulent nature of the fitness industry in and around it. So, yeah.
So when you're writing this character, do you go to the real person and be like, hey, you're going to be in my film?
No, didn't do that because I thought she might, I don't know, rip my head off and shit down my neck. So decided not to tell her. Though it's funny, somebody who attends my gym who watched the film said to me, I think, I won't use her real name, I think this trainer would actually be quite flattered by your interpretation of her because she really is quite mad. So you never know. Maybe one day I'll pluck up the courage and I'll send her an email and tell her to check it out. So yeah.
What I enjoyed too was not only the hysterical look at the trainer herself, but also the different clients as well.
Yes. So, there's a range of clients through the day. Absolutely.
So are those caricatures of the different clients that you've seen at the gym as well?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, yeah, when you think of I think we discussed last time, whenever I do a film or any project, whether it be one of my audio downloads or one of the books, I always have the rule of that the joke is king. So comedy must always come first. The joke is always king. And then any other underlying message can come second to that. And so with a few of the clients, there are some little underlying messages. I mean, if you take Tabitha Dwindle, the one that's doing the crunches in the park, we interview her after her training session and she's like, oh, you know, me and my personal trainer, we're really good pals, you know? And I'm like, well, why? And, you know, like, because you often see in real life, I mean, people just for some bizarre reason, which I will never understand, just automatically think their personal trainer's their buddy. I mean, it's not like your dentist is suddenly your buddy because he's your dentist. You know what I mean? I don't see why a personal trainer suddenly is your friend just because they tell you to do a bunch of squats. I don't get it. But, you know, but yeah, there's a little bit of a political underlining commentary underneath some of those clients as well. When I was writing it, I wanted to make sure that I had every kind of aspect of personal training in there. So that's why we've got the yoga and the swimming and the different age groups of the clients and the different mm-hmm. things that she does, you know, with them all yeah. to make sure that, you know, because like I've said to you before, if you're going to pick on something, so in this example, it's the fitness industry, you got to be even. You got to pick on everything. You can't just pick out one little bit. You got to pick on the lot, you know? So you got to be even-handed. So that's sort of where I was going with it.
Well, and you definitely succeeded too, because throughout the film, I'm like, uh-oh, what's he going to do here?
Yeah, well, I don't want to give too much away, but some of the characters might not actually see the end of the film. It's, you know, so... Yeah, different things happen. There's no doubt about that.
So how much of the film's humor was scripted and how much of it was improvised or changed when you actually get the characters on scene and you start hearing your words come out of their mouth?
Oh, no, it's 110% scripted. I'm really, really strict with my scripts. I'm quite anal, in fact. So I write it and the actors are aware when they get the part. They come in for their audition. And when they get the part, they're made aware that they need to be word perfect for rehearsal. So I'm really, really strict. There's very, I think I could think of one part in the whole piece where we had to change just a single line because it just wasn't sounding quite right. But no, I really take a lot of care when I'm writing my scripts that, you know, I actually, because like we discussed, I can't see very well, so I'm legally blind. So my computer talks to me, and I actually think that that's an advantage when I'm writing because I'm actually hearing the words back as I'm writing the script, so I can sort of hear how it is going to sound. So it's kind of like having a table read without having a table read while I'm writing the script. So it actually sort of works to my advantage in a little way when I'm writing. So, yeah, I'm really, really strict about the script. I think I drive some of the actors mad. And there are some actors that don't like it. You know, they prefer to sort of improv and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, but I am very strict with my script. So, yeah, no, it is all 100% scripted.
Nice. So you're the Australian David Lynch of comedy.
Yeah, I suppose so, yes.
I remember there was a story during Twin Peaks The Return where I think Belushi changed a line and David Lynch got really mad at him, and there was just that moment of you never change a line in my movie.
Yeah, well that is me. No, that is 100% me. And like, because I write it, I know the script backwards, so even if they get a word wrong, like an "ah" for a "the" or a "with" or an "of" or something like that, I'm like, do it again. And they're like, what? I said, well, you messed up your line, so just do it again. So they do it again. Like, yeah, it's, I think I drive some of them mad, but they get it. Like when they see the final product, I hope that they go, oh, okay, I understand now. I get why he is like that. So yeah, but yeah, that's just how I go. Yeah.
What's awesome, though, is your lead actress in the film was amazing, and I really felt that she took the film to another level. Her energy level and how she committed to the role was impressive.
Yeah, 110%. I'm with you with that one. She was an absolute superstar.
Yeah, what's it like going from the computer to Katie, you know, embodying the role as the personal trainer?
Well, when we do the audition, so I had a lot of trouble casting that role. As you could imagine, I mean, it's not an easy role to play because she's not just yelling at her clients. There are other scenes where she's doing monologues to camera or other scenes where she's got to do other little bits and pieces. So it's not just one dimensional. Like it was a really tricky role for her to play. And it took actually 3 casting sessions to find somebody to play that role. I went through, I reckon I saw about 30 different actors before.
Oh, wow.
Before Katie came in and she got the part. But she came in for the audition, and she was already in costume, so she was already into. She thought the script was really cool, so she was really into it. And yeah, she just came in and she hit it out of the park. And it's really cool, actually, because sort of going back to your question, it's really cool when, as you say, I've heard the computer read it to me and I've got the voice in my head of how I want it to sound. But then it's really cool when an actor comes in and they just nail it, because I've seen all of these other actors come in and just kind of, I don't want to be rude, but, you know, just not, they didn't butcher it, but they just didn't get the jokes, or they didn't get the character, or they didn't have the right energy or whatever it is. And so you're like, no, that's not really what I'm hearing in my head. That's not what I want. And so it sounds really cool then when the actor comes in and they just go bang and hit it out of the park, you know? And you're like, yes, finally, I've got my Jackie Cooper. I've got her. She's right here. This is cool. So let's go on. And look, you are right. I mean, when people watch the film, the things that I made that poor woman do is just, I mean, she, if nothing else, she's a really good sport, because she, I mean, I know I'm paying her to do it, but even still, I mean, we made her do some pretty outrageous things and eat and drink some horrible things. And yeah, so she was fantastic. Not one time did her energy drop through filming. She was full of energy all the way through filming. She was really terrific.
So when you have a moment like that where the character is really coming to life, how does that energize you as the director?
Oh, so much. Absolutely. 100%. Because all of a sudden, like when going back to casting for that role, you know, I'm seeing all these actors come through and I'm going, oh shit, am I ever going to find my Jackie? I don't think, because Simon, my main production guy, I had a chat to him. He's going, well, you got to pick somebody. And I'm going, well, I'm not just going to have anybody. It's got to be the, because as you see, I mean, she's pretty much in every scene. So if she's crap, then the film's going to be crap. So I just can't pick anybody. It has to be the right person. So yeah, as soon as she comes in, it just perks me back up. It's like having a big mouthful of Red Bull, you know. I'm back in town, you know. So it's really cool. And then once she's on board and you know, you start working with her and you're hearing the scenes, you know, rehearsals are a lot of fun, you know, because then all the other actors come in, because it's a reasonably big cast for this one. So all the other actors come in and you start playing the scenes and rehearsing the scenes, and they're sounding better and better and better. And yeah, you're right. It does. It fills me full of energy. It really gets me going. So that's the fun part of my job, no doubt about it.
Yeah. From concept to release, how much time has this taken?
Well, the script was written a while ago, and I've been sitting on it for a little bit of time, mainly because it was a reasonably expensive film to make. So I was just sort of getting the coin together to do it. And then once I got the coin together to do it, I was like, okay, let's rock and roll. So I started casting. So it got released last Monday. I started doing castings, which is always the first thing I do, is casting the film. And that got done at the end of middle of February. So it's about three and a half months. So about 14 weeks, something like that. So yeah, so it's a reasonably quickish turnaround. Like, I mean, we shoot, then we edit, and then it gets released. That part's really quick, but then all the pre-production stuff is what takes time. So there was a lot of locations for this one. There was a lot of costumes for this one. So there was a lot of and makeup as well. We had to go through quite extensively as well with Natalie, who's she's my new makeup artist, who she absolutely crushed it with the makeup. I mean, she did a wonderful job. So yeah, there's a lot of pre-production that goes into it, and then the actual filming, editing, and release is like bang, bang, bang. So that's the quick part of it. So yeah.
Well, it's amazing too, because you are also producing it in terms of getting the money for it. So, you know, what does that look like?
That's just all about Beer Nuts Productions and the sales we get. So when people log on to the Beer Nuts Productions website and they download a copy of the film, every penny of that goes into making the next project. So that's why, obviously, I encourage people to obviously download as many projects off the website as they want to, because it means that I can make more projects. So yeah, it's essentially that's how I go about getting the funding for it. There's no third party involvement at all. So I don't, in Australia, a lot of films get made with government funding and all that sort of stuff, but I don't even bother because it's just too painful to deal with them. So I'm like, you know what? I was explaining it to one of my crew members the other day. I'm like, I think of it as in, I'm going to play football in this field over here, and if you want to play football with me, you can come over and join me, but I'm not going to go into your football field because it's just too much of a mess and I can't be bothered with it. So I'll just play football over here and you guys can come and join me and have fun with me if you want to. You know, that's sort of how I guess I look at it sort of business-wise, you know, because it's just too much otherwise. So, yeah, I just – yeah, no third-party involvement. It's all me. It's all beer nuts. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And I imagine, too, the more third parties you add – you might have to take some humor out, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, 100%. So that's the other reason. I mean, I always say to my cast members, a joke takes however long it takes to tell. And the same goes for the film as well. So I have nobody saying to me, the film has to be a certain amount of time. So when I'm writing it, it's just, okay, this is what needs to be said and done and whatnot. So the script's done. I don't bother wondering how long it's going to be when we film it because that's not important to me. Mm. What's important is the content. So same thing when we edit, I'm not looking at the clock. I'm just looking at editing the scenes so that they're as funny as they can be. And then it's actually quite funny. Simon, who helps me with my editing, when we finish, because we don't actually look at the timeline, we're just worried about editing the scene, so we're not actually paying any attention to the timeline. And so when we get to the final end credit, I say, don't look, Simon, let's have a guess and see how long it's been. And we always just have a guess, and we're always way out. But yeah, we always have a guess as to how long the film's going to be. So this one comes in at just over 24 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's how long, like I say, that's just how long the jokes took to tell. So I've got nobody telling me what I can and can't say, what I can and can't do. Because you are right. There's a few scenes in this that, you know, commercial networks might not approve of. So, so if I had third party involvement, they might go, oh, no, you can't do this, or, you know, you can't do that. But I've got free rein to say what I want to say and how I want to say it, which is really cool. It's one of the absolute pluses of what I do.
Well, and I imagine it's super empowering when you have that level of freedom.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, yeah, I can say what I want to say, how I want to say it. So I can do the jokes exactly how I want to do. If I want to do a little bit of a political satire message in there as well, I can slip that underneath as well. You know, so I can do all of that kind of stuff without having somebody tapping me on the shoulder and going, oh, no, you can't say that. You can't do this. Or it has to be a certain time, or, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it is. It's really cool because at the end of the day, with comedy more than any other genre, you know, timing is imperative. I mean, a joke needs to be told a certain way for it to be funny. Otherwise, it's just not going to work. I mean, that's why some comedy sketch shows on television I'm not a big fan of, because you can tell that they've said, okay, every sketch needs to be a certain length, and that just doesn't work. Some sketches are going to be short, some sketches are going to be long. It's just, I mean, you and I were chatting earlier about Monty Python before you started recording. We're having a bit of a chat about Monty Python, and they're brilliant because nobody was going to them saying that a sketch needed to be a certain way or a certain length. They just did what they wanted to do, and the BBC were like, yeah, no, that's cool, we'll just air it. Because I suppose back in the, late 60s, early 70s, they didn't care so much, you know. There wasn't so strict, you know. There wasn't so many people in suits, you know, getting their knickers in a twist, you know what I mean? So they were lucky in the time. Could you imagine those guys now trying to do that, you know, the Flying Circus show nowadays on telly? I mean, half of that stuff would be censored out, or they'd be told, oh, no, that doesn't work because that's too silly or whatever, you know? I mean, they just wouldn't be able to produce a show like that, which is really sad, you know? So luckily for me, I get to do all those silly things that people might say no to. So it's really cool.
That is cool. Like, from your perspective, who's doing comedy right today other than Beer Nuts Productions, of course?
Well, yes, of course, Beer Nuts Productions is number one. Let's not let's not forget about that. But There's some really good Australian comedians that I really enjoy. There's a great Australian writer called Sean McAuliffe, who's got a couple of TV shows out here, who is absolutely, the man's a genius. He's absolutely fantastic. In America, I enjoy more, actually. I've been getting into a lot more of the American satire stuff. I mean, I love Stephen Colbert and what he does, and I really enjoy Samantha Bee and what she does. As far as stand-ups go, I really love Dave Attell. He's one of my favorite stand-ups. Mm-hmm. But I like people that do things that I can't do. So somebody like Stephen Lynch, who is probably my all-time favorite comedian, he's an American guy who does comedy songs, and he does it so brilliantly because he's got this sweet, beautiful voice, and the music is so well done, and he's got strings, and he's got this, and he's got that. And then the songs that he sings about are vile and disgusting, and he's talking about the most awful things, but he does it in such... I've got a friend of mine who actually sings in a cover band, and he said to me, you know what, if I was to put a Stephen Lynch song on as my break music, people would go, oh, what a lovely song, that's really great, you know, oh, that's a really pretty song that he's singing. And then they'd listen to the lyrics and go, holy shit, that's not cool. So That's what I love about it. It's so clever. The way he does it is so, so clever. And it's something, I mean, I have no musical ability at all. It's just not, I wish I did. I think it's a really cool skill and gift to have, but it's just not something I can do. Not a musical bone in my body. But, I mean, so that's why I think another reason why I admire him so much is because he's hilariously funny and he's gifted musically, and it's just, yeah, the way he does it is just so beautiful. And I really enjoy watching old British comedians. And so I think a lot of that comes through in my writing as well, sort of the old British kind of style as well. I think sort of comes through in my writing because that's kind of what I grew up on watching as well. So I do still enjoy sort of digging back in the vault and watching that kind of stuff too. So, yeah.
How much of the influence of all of these different types of comedians and different types of genres work together to create these films and your sense of humor?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question, because I think being Australian actually is an advantage, because we've got a great crossover, because we grew up on both English and American humor, which is both two very different types of humor. So it's kind of like we sort of cherry pick the best from each kind of genre, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it sort of boils into what we do, or what I do, I should say. And so, yeah, I think like I grew up watching the English comedians, and then when I got more, you know, 14, 15, 16 years of age, then I started, you know, I remember going to the cinema and watching Wayne's World, you know, remember Wayne's World?
Yeah.
And going, man, this is hilarious. You know, I would have been, how old would I have been? I was born in 81, and Wayne's World came out in what, about 1990? So I would have only been about 10 or 11 when I watched it. So I probably actually shouldn't have been watching it. But I remember going to the cinema with my mates, and we just absolutely just flipped a lid, man. We were like, this is so cool. This is hilarious, you know? Because it was so silly, but so, yeah, it was different to what we'd sort of seen before. And then yeah, I started watching more stuff like that, you know? And so... yeah, I've had a nice crossover. So I think I sort of took the best of both worlds, and sort of that's sort of what molded sort of what I do. So yeah.
Bringing it back to a day in the life of a personal trainer, do you have a favorite moment in the film?
Oh, let me think. I don't think so, because I mean, I like it all. Obviously, I wrote it. I enjoy it all. I really love the performances. I thought, because as we were talking about Katie, who plays the main character of Jackie, and she's absolutely sensational, but if the supporting cast don't back her up with really good performances, mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be hard for her to do it. And all the supporting cast, of which there are lots, because all of her clients and all of that, and even like I tried to throw in some subtle jokes in there as well. I don't know if you noticed, like, for example, we've got the two kids sitting on the blanket, and one's black and one's white. So it's like the mother clearly has two separate fathers going on, you know, like little things like that just tickle me, you know. I just think that sort of stuff's kind of amusing. So, but if the supporting cast, like even the stalker, you know, and that's, again, down to Natalie, who did the makeup. I mean, she made him look so creepy and wrong, you know. It was really cool. Yeah, the supporting cast really absolutely hit it out of the park for me, which makes all those little scenes with her and her clients, it makes it work. You know, when you think in the gym with the bigger woman in the gym when they're doing the, you know, the bicep curls and everything, and she's, you know, she just insults her and all this sort of stuff, you know. Her reactions are just a magic, you know, and the couple of old guys that she has to train and all that sort of stuff. Like, everybody absolutely killed it. So, yeah, really, really happy with the with how it all came out. Yeah.
I got to say that my favorite moment is when you have that interplay between the narrator and her, where you break that fourth wall almost Deadpool style.
Yeah. You know, I like doing that kind of stuff because, yeah, in the last film, The Environment, which was the mockumentary about the environment, which we talked about last time, there's a little bit of that going on in that too, because I do find that kind of funny as well. Yeah, just to you got to mix it up a little bit. So yeah, no, it's hard to time that kind of stuff, but it does pay off. It is quite funny.
So how do you experiment with new forms of comedy? Is it just trying new things in each film, or are you intentionally pushing yourself into new areas of comedy?
It's kind of like I said earlier with the script. So it's whatever works for that particular script that I want to write. So with this one, it started with knowing the personal trainer at the gym that I go to and thinking, I've got to write you down. What's the best way to write you down? And so then I wrote the bones of the script with her, with clients and stuff, and how that would work. And also, we were chatting earlier about the scene in the car before she actually starts her day at work and what she gets up to in the car, because that's how I think this woman must have started every day of her life, because nobody could be that up and about normally, you know what I mean? So that was sort of that was the first joke of the whole thing that I actually wrote, was that particular scene. And then going through her clients and then thinking, okay, well, how can I make this work? And I thought, well, I'll turn it into more of a mockumentary style, sort of a day in the life of. And that's sort of how this one came about. So it's just making whatever subject or whatever character I choose and making that work somehow, you know? So yeah. That's sort of how the writing process goes with me, at least.
That's awesome. So congratulations on the recent announcement of being in the top 50 of small businesses in Australia.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes. I mean, that was yesterday that took place. So that was really cool.
Yeah. How'd that come about?
Well, I did about 6 months ago, I did an interview with Inside Small Business magazine, and the editor who did the interview with me, I just sort of, I did the interview with him and he was really cool and everything was fine. And then about 6 weeks ago, you know, he was following me on Facebook and Twitter and all of those sorts of things, which, of course, all your listeners can do as well. I'm all over social media. So Beer Nuts Productions, of course. Amy, who does my marketing, would kill me if I don't plug all the social media channels, because she's very strict. She's a really lovely person, but I'm kind of scared of her as well. But
Maybe that's your next film.
Maybe crazy publicist, but about 6 weeks ago, he sends me an email and he says, I had no idea. It's not something that you nominate for or anything like that. He just gave me an email about 6 weeks ago saying, you're in the running for a top 50 businesses in Australia. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then about a month ago, he says, you're in the magazine for the top 50 businesses in Australia. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. He says, we've got a function going on. Can you come along? I said, oh, absolutely. So, we went to that function. Amy and I went to that function last night and met some of the other people from the magazine with some interesting. So it's cool, actually. There was because it wasn't just entertainment, it was like all businesses. Hmm. So, I mean, one of the other ladies that we were chatting to has invented maternity wear for high visibility workers. So like your road workers and your mine workers and that sort of stuff. There was no maternity wear for the female workers to wear. Hmm. And so she went and she invented that and she's like become really successful, which is really cool for her, you know. We had a chat to her and she was a really lovely lady. And so it was interesting listening to some of the other people and their stories and what their businesses do and what they get up to. But I think we were the only entertainment one, so, which was pretty cool as well. So It was a nice little pat on the back, I suppose, for what we do, which is cool. So yeah.
Yeah, that's super cool. And I wonder what kind of impact that may have on your future.
Well, there's a magazine, Inside Small Business Magazine, do a special yearly report with this 50 businesses in Australia. And obviously, I did an interview with Tim 2 weeks ago for that to be in the magazine. And that came out a couple of days ago, I think, the actual magazine itself. So hopefully people, I think obviously you could download it overseas, but hopefully people in Australia will buy a copy, and if they didn't know about me before, they'll know about me then, which is cool. So it's just, look, at the end of the day, man, it's all about getting the word out about Beer Nuts Productions and letting people know I exist so they can go to the website and enjoy all the films and everything that we have to offer.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what's next?
I'm still in a mockumentary kind of a mood, so I'm going to get another subject and rip that one to shreds. I'm not 100% sure. I've got a few different ideas of which particular profession I want to go with, but I'll have a bit of a hunt through, because I've got, what I do is I sort of write down scripts as I go, and then I sort of save them, put them to one side, and then when it's time to do the next project, I sort of just go through what I've got and see, is it doable? Could I change the script a little bit? You know, what can I do? So I've got a few different little mockumentary sort of ideas that I've written. So I'll have a bit of a look through them and see which one I want to go through next, because they're a lot of fun to do when you get to take a subject like this. Because this is we've done, obviously, this one's about the fitness industry. We've done the environment, we've done drugs, and we've done pornography as well. So
what's so, left? Yeah,
well, yeah. So we've got a few other. I mean, I'm a very cynical and bitter man. So there's a lot of other subjects a lot of other professions that I want to rip apart. And it's fun to do. It really is. Like I say, it's fun to take something like the fitness industry in this one and personal trainers especially, and tear it apart, because I mean, let's be honest, personal trainers, they should be mocked. They really should. I mean, they're there to be mocked. It's just, they make it so easy. So, you know, just, I had to do it, you know? So, yeah, but we'll see what happens. So, yeah, stay tuned and you'll see the next one come out hopefully pretty soon.
Nice. What's funny is you don't strike me as a cynical and bitter man.
It all comes out in the writing. So, yeah.
Well, that's good.
So Simon, my production man, when we're editing, he'll be like, he'll just look at me and he'll just shake his head and he'll be like, "Oh, Goff, oh, you're a bad man, Goff. You're a bad, bad man."
That's awesome. Well, Goff, it's been an absolute pleasure to catch up. Thanks so much for sharing some time about making your film. And I hope that to hear from you again in another 4 months, and that you're releasing another film at beernutsproductions.com.
Absolutely. And yeah, if everybody just goes to, as you just said, beernutsproductions.com, and they can download the last film and hopefully they can check out all the other work we've got there as well, because there's plenty of stuff to, when they're not listening to Getting Work to Work, of course, there's plenty of other stuff at Beer Nuts Productions to watch. But yeah, hopefully the A Day in the Life of a Personal Trainer will amuse them. So yeah, but yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. And you know what? Beer Nuts Productions is infinitely more funny than Getting Work to Work, so...
you got to talk yourself up, man. Don't be so down on yourself, you know?
Oh, I'm not being down. It's hard to compete with this level of hilarity.
I feel like I should fly over and give you a hug. I mean, might have to call in the Samaritans or something just to make sure you're okay, you know?
Oh my gosh, you're hilarious. That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It means so much to me that you're here. If you're wondering, hey, I've heard this guy before. Goff has been on the podcast before. And if you haven't listened to his previous episode, you can find it at gwtw.co/129. And we go into a little bit more about his background, the fact that he is a legally blind filmmaker. He has limited eyesight, and he tells a little bit about how he goes through the filmmaking process. It's a really cool episode, so be sure to listen to that episode. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and perhaps people who need more laughter in their lives? I mean, who doesn't like a good fart joke, right? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. You can drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm Chris at chrismartinstudios.com, or you can find me on Twitter. I'm at CM Studios. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.